Hello, people, and welcome back to the Outbounds podcast. It's been some time, like 3-4 weeks since we last put an episode, but due to unforeseen circumstances, is what it is at this point. Like, inconsistency happened, but we are back to being consistent, and we are back with a new episode of the podcast with the dynamic duo of me and Sam. How are we doing?
I'm good, man. Kobe and Shaq. I'm happy to be Kobe. Yeah, that's my life. So you can be Shaq. Yeah. I can be Kobe. But I'm good, man. Like I said, happy to be back on. I ain't been on for a while because my Wi-Fi has been mad. So I ain't been hijacked no more. You can see it's clear, HD ready. So I'm happy to have these conversations, man. It's been a minute. So whenever we get into it, man.
So obviously, let's just get straight into it. Because it's been recorded on Tuesday. So yesterday we had the London Derby again, which the Chelsea versus Tottenham, which is a bit of a weird rivalry just because of, like, Tottenham don't win enough to trouble us. But it's, I don't know, there just seems to be a lot of hostility around that rivalry, even more than Arsenal versus Chelsea. I think, obviously, Arsenal versus Chelsea within fans will always be more hostile, but I think in terms of when the games are played, Chelsea versus Tottenham always seem to go to another level. Like, even our sons, like, we hate Tottenham, Chelsea, and all that stuff, innit? But obviously, yesterday was one of the weirdest games that I've ever watched. And it was so weird that it became so funny. Like, obviously, I'm going to give my thoughts on the game, innit? But I'm just going to ask you, what did you think of that game overall?
You know what? So, what's so funny? I wasn't able to watch the game live because I was busy, but I watched the highlights. And then from what I saw from the highlights I watched, and then obviously on Twitter, it was so strange because you had so many intricacies within that game. You had the offsides, you had the VAR check-ins, you had goals that are disallowed, but then in that same goal that was disallowed, they gave a penalty, someone got sent off. So it was just so hectic and, like, manic, yeah? It was crazy. And, like, I was coming home and I heard, like, some fans talking and I heard they were disgruntled. I was like, oh, snap, the game's on. And for some reason, I just assumed they were Chelsea fans, like, complaining, like, they lost, whatever. And I just went on to Bleacher Report, and I saw it was 4-1. I saw Tottenham had 2 sending off. I said, what the hell was this? And then, like, when I checked on Twitter what people were saying, I was so spun because everyone was like, yeah, Jackson Sanchez, the smelliest hat-trick I've ever seen. I'm like, how can you get mad at someone that scored a hat-trick, yeah? But everyone's saying it was trash, and I didn't get it. Then when I saw it, when I saw the highlights and obviously heard people talking about it, they said he played so poor that he missed so many chances. He could have had like 8 goals or 5 goals, yeah? And the hat-trick was like, you know, it was at the end of the game where, okay, cool, Tottenham was playing that high line and he was able to capitalize and he scored 2 late goals. I saw it was like 90, 93, then like 97. So it was crazy. And then I was watching Sky Sports this morning, people saying like, this is probably one of the most entertaining games that they've seen. So the whole result and how Tottenham have been playing, I didn't expect this, but I'd said to my other boys that, like, in other chats, I said, don't put it past Chelsea to win, because these type of games where Chelsea are the underdog and they can sit back and counter, that's where they're most likely to perform. And in games where they have to be the attacker and aggressor, i.e. against Brentford, you're not going to see the best of them. So it was a bit of a strange game. But, you know, for me, I'm happy because Arsenal lost on the weekend. They're crying. We're going to speak about that. Tottenham lost their unbeaten run. And then we won. Yeah. We spanked Bournemouth. And we're top of the table, 3 points clear of Arsenal and them, man, and a point clear of Tottenham. So for me, it was a great weekend, but that game was just mad entertaining.
Nah, so obviously, as you say, you did watch the game, but you also seen it from a neutral point of view, yeah? Now, the sequence of events of everything that happened that game just became weirder and weirder because, so first of all, we got to start with Christian Romero, whereas in, he got sent off eventually. Yeah. But then it was a situation for me where he should have been sent off before that even happened. And then what's the left back? Udogie. Yeah. He also got sent off eventually. But then for me, he should have been sent off before that anyway. So the 2 players that got sent off for Tottenham, in my eyes, should have been sent off before. Now, obviously, people talk about the pen decision because they're saying he touched the ball first and stuff like that. And I kind of get where they come from in terms of the red card situation, because I think a lot of people say it's a clear red card, and especially in football when you talk about dangerous and high and stuff. But the way I just saw it was like he won the ball, and sometimes it's hard to control when you're off balance anyways. But then even when stuff are a mistake, then you still have to give that as a where it is dangerous for us. So I was happy to see him go because, like, he's just a thug anyways. Like,
he's reckless, man. He's
he gets placed with recklessness.
He does kind of put Sergio Ramos to, like, shame. You think, like, Sergio Ramos was elite butcher, but this guy, they said, like, in 75 games, he's had the most sending offs, which is 4. Like, it's just crazy.
So then, obviously, Caicedo scored this one, but then that got disallowed because of, obviously, they said Jackson was standing offside. And we're going to get to Jackson a bit. And then he comes back, and then, obviously, Cole Palmer, he goes on to score, and he equalizes, And what Chelsea reminded me of yesterday, was a Robert that did not have the upgrade package. Because that was sort of the lowest IQ football that I've ever watched in my whole life. Yeah. Like, it gets to a point it became so frustrating now because we won 4-1, and instead of me celebrating, I was laughing in disbelief of what I've just watched.
A lot of Chelsea fans were like that.
Second,
there's a lot of Chelsea fans I spoke to were like that.
First of all, you talk about the chances that, never just Nicholas Jackson that we missed in general, but everyone's praising Ange. Well, mainstream media's praising Ange for all the highline stuff he was playing,
Yeah.
First of all, Ange was even playing this highlight when he had 11 guys up. So why he decided to do it with 9 men? He was... Like, I know when a manager purposely loses the game. Like, I'm not going to say it was tactically inept from Ange because tactically inept is when you try something and it doesn't pay off and you're thinking, why are you trying this? I know why Ange was doing that because he purposely wanted to lose that game. It reminded me of, like, Conte versus Man City.
Self-sabotage, yeah?
Yeah, in 2018. That was definitely self-sabotage because if you're not playing that highlight with 11 men, why would you... play so like his players are literally standing the halfway line, and then Chelsea on the other hand, you think it's one of the easiest things to break down, just hold the line because you've got Sterling who's quick and you've got Nicholas Jackson who has some pace. Like, look at him, he had one sprint with Van der Mickey and Mickey pulled up.
Van der Mickey.
He's not that. I've had enough of this, innit? Now, Nicholas Jackson, it was one of those now. I've said it before, especially like his first 5 game of the season, I knew this was the trajectory that Nicholas Jackson was heading towards because Nicholas Jackson, especially beginning of the season, did so many good stuff for us.
Yeah.
But his end product just wasn't there in terms of the hold-up play, spinning a defender and all that kind of stuff. But I said, especially with Chelsea, that we've had so many first strikers and we're tired of it.
Yeah.
Once a striker starts to not score goals, people are going to stop caring about all the good things that you're doing.
Then
when they start getting onto your confidence, is going to start going like this. Because I remember when Werner first joined us, his performance against Brighton, Liverpool, like, especially that Liverpool game, even though we end up losing because Kepa's dumb, Werner was dribbling past. Like, he had ISO package, dribble, size up.
He was doing his thing for a bit.
Yeah, and then, but when you're not scoring, and people are like, oh, fucking hell, Werner again, it starts to calm down, you start second-guessing yourself. And that was the trajectory Jackson is heading towards, But then everything just switched when, obviously, he scores that breakaway goal, where Sterling puts the cross and we score,
Left foot.
And I was thinking, like, you know what? Fucking finally, because, like, it's about damn time. Like, these men have been up to... And one crazy thing as well, is even when even before the first red card happened, after Spurs scored, when the first red card happened, Chelsea were dominating. Like, on, like, one of our dominant performance. So, how you dominate against 11 guys, And when the main thing comes across, you guys don't know what to do anymore. So, that Nicholas Jackson comes here, and then when he scores the second goal, I start laughing because I was thinking, no way a striker can put this poor performance, and he comes over with a brace here. When he goes on and he scores the hat-trick here, I tell you, no exaggeration, I literally cry tears of laughter because... It was like, what? Like, how's he done this? And then he does the Sue celebration,
That was funny. I saw that.
For someone that hated Nicholas Jackson for 70 minutes of that game,
yeah.
I loved him just from the simple fact, not that he played well, but how shameless he was. And I love shamelessness in it.
Bro, that's what I saw everyone saying. Like, the guy is so shameless. Like, he scored a hat-trick and he did a Sue. But I'm like, let me deep it. He scored a hat-trick, but the fans are still mad. Like, make it make sense. And it's like what you said, though, isn't it? When fans have that expectation at first, like, they give you a little blind, and after that, you sink down, and anything you do can never be good, because not in a bad way. Like, I see the way Chelsea fans get onto Cole Palmer, and you would think Cole Palmer's a superstar, and it just shows you, not in a bad way, the level where Chelsea are, because Cole Palmer, the level that Chelsea want to be at is the same level as Man City. but Cole Palmer couldn't get into our Man City team. But he's come to Chelsea and Poch has made him the talisman. But we've seen the Chelsea fans just gravitate to him so much that he's got so much in the bank that he could play shit for 10 games. Chelsea fans will still love him. But like you said,
he's been playing really well. That's one. He's one player I would say he's been playing really well, Cole Palmer.
But that's what I'm trying to say. Because he's got that in the bank here, even if he plays bad for 10 games, yeah, Chelsea fans won't get at him. But whereas, because Jackson started off missing chances, not really playing well, he could score a hat-trick and the whole Chelsea fans are not even be like, oh, he scored a hat-trick, let's celebrate him. They're saying it was a smelly hat-trick. He's shameless.
You see that hat-trick he scored, yeah?
Yeah.
And has done wonders for his goal-to-game and goal-to-minutes ratio.
Bro.
Because now he's getting, now he has a goal, because he's played 10 games and he scored five goals.
Five goals.
Exactly. More goals than Julian Alvarez, Saka, all these players you mentioned. I haven't checked. He's now top 10 in Prem goal scorers this season. He's tied fourth for most goals. Like,
there you go.
It's everything that could have gone right for Jackson yesterday went right in terms of the goal scoring thing. And he's so doing like this points ahead. And I was like, you know what? You know,
let him live, man.
I didn't celebrate the win, but I just laughed because normally a game against your rivals, you're like, yes, what a win and all that kind of stuff. But I was just in massive disbelief on how low, like, these are professional footballers playing the highest level, and how low the IQ could have been yesterday. They even pushed out getting mad when, like, those times I've seen players standing offside and complaining why they're not getting the ball. And I'm thinking, brother, because you're offside, like...
But I hear that. But even some of the football, like, do you blame Poch though? Because like I said, when it's the big teams, he finds a way to step up where it's like he's got a small team mentality, like he's at Southampton. But then when he has to play the team where he has to be in the front foot, we don't see that same aggressiveness from Chelsea. It's very passive where it's like, we'll pass around, we won't do nothing. But when you're playing a bigger team, you guys, okay, cool. You figure this is what we need to do. We need to be compact and then break. Like, do we have to look at Poch as well in terms of how he's thinking and taking these games when they're coming towards
us? I'll say yes from the standpoint of, like, tactically, and I'm not even going to use the Tottenham game as an example. Actually, I can use the Tottenham game just because, as I said, from the 6th to the 33rd minute, I thought Chelsea were outstanding. So I'll say yes in terms of that. One thing I would defend Poch with is yesterday made me, and I wouldn't have said this until yesterday, I've realised what our biggest problem with Chelsea, which I saw some signs of it, but it's confirmed for me, our players are just not football smart. And that's just something you can't coach.
It's true. Like,
players with talent and stuff like that, but I feel like when you're playing against low block, you just need players that are intelligent. I think Cole Palmer is intelligent. I think Sterling, I think he's been good this season, but yesterday he was just dumb. There was a time I saw Mudrik, who was wide open by himself on the left-hand side, and this guy dribbled into three guys when he... Like, you know that sometimes you have the ball and there's some players that just close you down. And even though you can still pass it, but, you know, in those situations, you think to yourself, you know what? They tactically got you into that position, into the situation. Yesterday, he would run away from space into guys. And I'm thinking, like, against low blocks... You just need a bit more, like, even though there's tactics, because managers are not just going to come and let you win. I think with the counter-attack is stuff, whereas in you work a bit more on the fly. I feel like with the low blocks thing is you need to be very, very smart. You know what? I never said it yesterday. He was like, I don't get why Chelsea just keep throwing over the top. When you start passing side to side, you move teams around, you move them, you now drawing players out. That's when the space starts popping up. Obviously, I'm not a professional footballer, so it's easier said than done. But I'm just saying, with low blocks, those are the kind of things you need to do. And it's just funny. Like, I was lost for words. I just had tears of laughter yesterday because of, like, I couldn't. And I know that almost killed me. Like, when Dyer scored the offside goal. I was this close to switching on my TV. And if that you've scored, I wouldn't watch another Chelsea game for the rest of the month.
Why?
We go on to draw 2-2 against a 9-man Tottenham. I'm not watching another Chelsea. I'm not going to exaggerate and say for the rest of the season, because I know I love Chelsea and football too much. But for the rest of November, I would have just hung it up.
Yeah, and I think it's what it is, because obviously, even now, like, Poch is having time to work with him on the training ground. But in terms of a style of play, I still don't see that style of play that
they're trying to implement. So even when you're against down to nine men, like, for example, say that was City, nine men. City, we would have opened them up. We would have, it would have been done before that, because there's just ways to break them down in it. Like you said, yeah. You shift them. Yes, we could have, you know, different patterns of playing particular areas of the park, and we'll open them up. But having Chelsea, like, if you really look at it, if it wasn't for that high line that they played, you could have ended up drawing that game against nine men and would have been like, what are we doing here? We spent all this money, got all this so-called talent, and we couldn't beat a nine-man team. Do you know what I mean? With Dier in defence, we had one. They were basically playing, what was they playing? 8-0-1, bro.
Yeah. I mean, Ireland, I wouldn't necessarily say there is no style of play. I do think Chelsea have played a lot of good football this season. And I feel like there's been numbers of games that I've come away thinking that we should have won and we didn't. And
but when you say like good that. Football, yeah, because when I say good football, I mean like entertainment. I've seen games where Chelsea have just got the ball and they've had possession for the sake of having possession. Like, it's just
you haven't been perfect.
Like, you see, like, for example, City, Arsenal, Liverpool, Tottenham, they have a style of play, possession, but it's like there's different intricacies.
Who played better than Arsenal this season? Like, are you talking about the football in terms of football in the eye?
I don't know. When I've watched Chelsea games, because I've watched a lot of Chelsea games, because I did believe in them based on the signings. And the games that I've seen, not all of them have played great. And even the games where they've lost and they've been smelly, I've started to look at Poch a certain type of way, because Poch had that cachet of he's this type of coach. But we saw certain stuff they did at Tottenham. It was decent football, but it was a lot of underdog mentality. Like, let's sit back. We'll get you on the counter against the big teams. Kane will drop deep as a number 10, long ball through or ball through to Son, and he's onto it. So with even Poch, you don't really know his style of play. He went to PSG. What was his style of play? It was, okay, we've just got stars and we'll leave it to them. So
I mean, I think with Poch, I think my biggest issue is I think the honesty. I think some people are just too honest to a fault when you were talking about the whole Tottenham, man. Like, I don't really care in it, but I'm just saying. And two, I think, I don't know how he speaks in the dressing room, because obviously we need to also understand that managers can say one thing in the media and then say another plays in the dressing room. But my only thing is, when the season started, you're talking about no excuses, must compete and all this kind of stuff. There's no such thing as a process if you're not winning and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And then we've got to this point of the season and it's not like, and things take time and all that kind of. If you just said that from the beginning of the season, that would be calm. But when you start looking at mentality monster at the beginning of the season and everyone's like, yeah, this is what we like to hear. And then 10 games into the season is now like, I don't know, man. You know, like, we're putting a new team together, all that kind of stuff. I think it just makes people lose a bit of faith in you. But obviously, stayed in North London, Arsenal, because
I'm here for it, man. I'm here for it.
So obviously, they dropped points against Newcastle over the weekend as well. And I've said it before, well, not obviously on the platform, but to like some of my Arsenal friends, yeah. I said, is it possible for Arsenal to ever have a defeat where they don't blame the refs for it? Because it seems like every single game, they're like, whenever they lose a game, they stop nitpicking this ref decision and that ref decision, blah, blah. And obviously, we recorded an episode in which I forgot to press record, where I said that, where we highlighted all the issues with VAR and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I don't think Saturday, the one against Newcastle, was one of them, because everybody was talking about how the Guardiola play was not conclusive and all that kind of stuff, which, fair enough. So that's 50-50. You've got the push on Gabriel, which...
That wasn't a foul.
I think he was looking for that anyways.
Exactly. He did the little practice.
And that wasn't offside for me. And what was interesting was, normally when you go into a press conference and they were asking Arteta to pinpoint which decision he disagreed with, and he couldn't tell them. He was just talking about the disgrace, this and the disgrace, blah, blah, blah. And I was thinking, the real disgrace was Arsenal's performance over the weekend. Because now, I do think, I'm going to play devil's advocate on myself a bit here, but I think on one end of the spectrum, you can argue that I think maybe Arsenal bring that proportion, because I don't know if they are still only 3 points behind Man City on the table. And I think, obviously, you need to be near perfection to beat City. But I think it's one of the things that keeps me going as a Chelsea fan, knowing that Pep is still the one in charge, because it's a thing that even if Chelsea were good, we might not even win that league anyways because Pep keeps hugging it. Like, let's just buy that time and become good when that guy finally decides to get out. God, I'm praying it's within the next 2 years because I'm sick of him. But you can look at it from that side, but you can also look from the other side in terms of a lot of the players just haven't played well enough this season. Like, they've been able to grind out results, which is what you can argue champions do. But you do that maybe 20% of the season. They've done it a lot of times this year. Yeah, and I know a lot of people want to talk about Havertz and talk about, oh, Havertz has been this as a signing and all that kind of stuff. My thing is, I'm not going to blame Havertz when Saka, I think, has been very, very average this year. Declan Rice has been good, but I don't think he's been good as he's been made out to be.
100%, I agree with that, bro.
Martinelli, I don't think, has been
poor. He's proven this season so far. He's been proven.
Yeah, and then as much as people want to blame Nketiah, I've said that for me, the reason I can't even look at Nketiah is because, first of all, Nketiah is a number two striker for a reason. He was never good enough to be the main striker. But then when Jesus, who's only giving one goal this season and he's missed 8 to 10 league goals a season and is constantly injured, I'm looking at him before I look at Jesus, because if Jesus's current is, obviously, I'm not going to bash a player for fitness, but even when Jesus is fit, doesn't give you enough goals anyways, which is why Nketiah keeps getting this looking. If, for example, until KDB got injured and you had Julian Alvarez, even though Julian Alvarez is better than Nketiah and he could probably be a starter, I don't know if in the Premier League winning team, but he could probably be a starter. You know, Haaland, because of the job Haaland was doing, Julian Alvarez will never get the chance to be the main man over there.
Of course.
I think Nketiah is getting that chance because of the crap Jesus is doing. So when you look at all these kind of factors, Odegaard, I don't think, has played up to the standard he did last season as well. When all your star players, and I've named about four of them, are not performing to the heights that they're not performing to, even if Jesus starts, even if Havertz starts bringing up the Bayern Leverkusen and Havertz, or the,
it's not going to make a difference.
I don't think it would make that much of a difference anyway. I agree. So, yeah, I'll just let you give your take on the whole Arsenal situation, and because for me, I think they're just making excuses.
For sure. I think there is a bit of excuse, and I think with Arsenal, what happened is last season kind of clouded their judgment. So they look at, like, last season, we could have won the league if we didn't slip up to West Ham, Liverpool, and Southampton. So they go based off on that. And then this season, like you said, they haven't played well, but in games, they've dug out and got the victory. And then what happened is that that victory against Man City kind of gassed them. Even though they played well, for them, it's like we got over that hurdle of where we was getting beaten up by the bigger brother.
12 times in a row.
Exactly. So for them, they're like, cool, we've made it. And then what pissed them off is that they lost to Newcastle, a team that they didn't think they was going to lose to. They thought they was going to go into St. James's Park and watch them and say, cool. And the reason why I'm happy with Arsenal losing, not because I thought they were going to do it. A lot of their fans were just talking so much rubbish about they're going to go unbeaten, we beat City. And I was like, bro, don't think because you beat City, that's where you win the league. No, you only play City twice. There's other teams that are going to compete against you and you're going to struggle. And I think a lot of these players have bought into the hype and they've just thought, okay, cool. All we need to do is show up and we're going to win. It doesn't work like that. As you said, Saka's been poor. Martinelli's been poor. Odegaard's been poor. And then Arteta, he's got this complex now where he thinks he's the smartest guy in the room. And he's doing all these different changes, playing Partey right back and then coming into midfield, doing this. And then you saw Zinchenko talking to Ferdinand like he was some superstar in terms of what he's doing. And since then, he doesn't play and he's looked poor. So I just think a lot of Arsenal players and the manager got caught up in the hype in terms of what they did last season, beating Man City. And instead of them to be humble and say, look, let's just take each game as it comes, they just expecting themselves to walk into games and win. And it just shows you, like, as you said, to beat Pep here, you have to be mad consistent and you have to be able just to, you know, put in win after win after win. And not to digress from this, we saw what City did. Yes, it was against Bournemouth, but we just demolished them and we saw players that you might not have thought of. Okay, cool, you see what Doku's doing, you're thinking, damn, there's certain games where Pep can just pick players based on who's playing. Like, you might be playing at Liverpool. Do you know what? I'm not playing Grealish. I'm playing Doku that's going to pepper him. But then you might play another game where you need a controller. You can play Grealish and stuff like that. So I just think, not Chelsea, I just feel that Arsenal need to just take the L and move on. Because when the same situation happened with Liverpool, what did Arteta say? oh, we can't blame the referees. They're human. We've got VAR. We've got to just live with the decision. But then when it's him, it's a disgrace. It's unbelievable. It's et cetera, et cetera. But then he never came out and said, you know what? Cool, I'm complaining, but Kai Havertz should have been sent off, but he didn't get sent off, because you can argue that Kai Havertz's tackle was worse than Romero's tackle yesterday, and Romero got sent off, and Kai Havertz got
yellow. I don't think Kai Havertz's one was a red, because I feel like the studs weren't that high, and besides, he tackled him. But I get where you're coming from in terms of like recklessness.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas I don't see Romero as being that reckless or that bad. He went in, but it's not like you see and you think, oh my days, it's a red. When you see Kai Havertz, you see this guy sliding. He's a bit off the ground. That's a leg breaker. Do you see what I'm saying? So I just think Arsenal to take the L, go back to the drawing board and figure out what they need to do. But again, if you've got a team of young players and then you don't have the relevant backups to replace them, that's where you're always going to struggle, because you take out Saka, who do you bring in for Saka? You take out Martinelli, who do you put in replacing Martinelli? You take out Odegaard.
This is one of my other big criticisms of Arteta as well, because you mentioned it as well, is I don't feel Arteta, and obviously there's always going to be levels that drops when you take off some of your best players, but then it's one of the reasons I think he hasn't won any cup competitions ever since he robbed us of the FA Cup back in 2020, I think it was. Because when you change your team, he's not able to get the same level of, like, obviously you won't get the same level of performance because the players aren't there, but that I still feel like the standard should kind of be the same in terms of, like, if you are playing out of the back, you should still be able to be still doing the same play at the back. And it's whenever he tweaks a bit, because, I mean, is the gap between Martinelli and Trossard that big? I don't know. I think
exactly.
I know that kind of, when you start making these tweaks, I mean, I'm talking about seeing people talk about, he's signed Jorginho when you're trying to win the league and all that kind of stuff. If Jorginho is your third choice CDM, that is quality if you ask me.
That's what I'd say, you're right.
Yeah, you got, so, like, you
got, Partey, then you got him. That's great. Like,
yeah, so these excuses always hiding behind the rest whenever you drop points and all that kind of stuff. I think it's just BS to me. And I think Arsenal needs to start looking more within their performances, because there's only so many times they can get away with putting in these kind of performances. Like, you can do it to finish top four, but you can't do it to win the league, especially in a league that Pep is doing is impossible. So, so, yeah.
Definitely. We're
interested to see. I think they're playing today or tomorrow in the Champions League, or whatever. So it's going to be interesting to see how they progress. Obviously, moving on to basketball. It's happened for some time now, but because of, as I said, unforeseen circumstances, we didn't get a chance to talk of it properly. James Harden is now a Clipper after forcing himself out of another situation.
Again.
Again. And I saw Brian Windhorst said that, you know what, it should be James Harden post career to teach players how to trade to where they want to go, because it seems like he's got
a master degree in that.
Yeah, it seems like he always gets where he wants to go. But it's interesting because obviously people normally talk about big threes and NBAs and super teams, and I don't know if I could really call the Clipper a big three like that just because of where Westbrook is in his career. But James Harden was still an all-star player last year, and if Westbrook is your fourth best player, I think that is, on paper, you would think that's great.
Yeah.
But how do you think the fit comes together for the Clippers?
Do you know what? I think if you get James Harden that was able to play with the big three in Brooklyn, where he was very pass first and it was more about getting assists and not really contributing like 30 or 40 points, then I think it could work. But then again, I just think defensively, I don't know how that works, because Kawhi is not that guy that he was in Toronto or even when he was in San Antonio, where he was great defensively. And nowadays, you see the superstars, nobody really wants to defend. Everyone wants to get points. And then when you've got Russ, you've got Kawhi, you've got James Harden, and you've probably only got PG that wants to defend. But if he's seen his bandmates and his running mates not defending, why is he going to defend? I just don't think it's going to work out, man. And I just think in terms of size, when you're playing like the Denver Nuggets and stuff like that, how's that going to benefit them having those guys on the court? So I think, yes, it's a play just to get James Harden and see how it works. Like, if it works, great. If it doesn't, everyone's going to laugh at you. So me personally, I don't think it's going to be a great fit, because I just don't, James Harden isn't that same guy anymore. I think he was saying he wants to go back to the old James Harden, where he was scoring 50 and 10 and 50 and 20 to go to Houston. But then all of a sudden, he wants to be a facilitator and he wants to help the Clippers win. So I'm not really too sure what James Harden we're going to get. We saw in his debut, they lost, you know, his debut, he lost. So it's going to take some time to bed in, but I don't really have any faith in the Clippers because, bro, we've been talking basketball for how long? And it's always been, if the Clippers do this, they're going to win a chip. And that's been 4 years now.
Maybe it's this, that, and all that kind of thing.
So I'm not going to start believing them in 2023, you know, that they're going to win. So I think it's going to be a one and done with James Harden. And he'll find the next place to move to. Probably be the Phoenix Suns, if he can get there.
Yeah. I mean, at the end of the day, I think my biggest issue, I think there's two things is, and they're kind of interlinked because I don't think they'll be a great defensive team.
Yeah.
Because as you mentioned before, I think Paul George is still in the
great
elite defender, but I think Kawhi is not I think when Kawhi decides he wants to, he can step up. He just doesn't able to do it for enough. A long period of time. Yeah, he doesn't have enough. I think James Harden, I think in the post, he's a good defender. I think he's an underrated post defender. Mm-hmm. But on the perimeter, I think he can be kind of lazy. And I think Westbrook as well. I think Westbrook is a very great disruptor, but he's 35. He doesn't have the lateral quickness. I think because of the defense and stuff like that, then offensively, as much stars as you want to have, at the end of the day, there's only one ball.
One ball, yeah.
And Paul George was talking about the reason he thinks it's going to work is because of like the whole IQ players, so you can run the same thing and you can get different results and all that kind of stuff, which is fine. But the issue is my bigger issue isn't Westbrook playing off ball, it's James Harden playing off ball. Because one is, I think Westbrook has gained so much respect of being on the Clippers that he's still going to be the one to run point. And I think he's done a very, very good to, as just, if you're just talking about the art of playmaking for the Clippers, I think he's been elite, like to the point where as in he's still on James Harden's level in terms of playmaking. So you're going to then turn James Harden into a shooter, into more of the shooters that I would think anyways.
Mm.
But the thing is, how many people are you going to do that for? And then when you don't have these guys, like Kawhi's going to play like 33 plus minutes, Paul George will play the same 33 plus minutes. Russ will play 33 plus minutes. James Harden will play 33 plus minutes. What are your, like, so I'm going to go and get the stats up and I'm going to sort of look on how many minutes the bench played. Mm-hmm. Because, first of all, so Plumlee only played 10 minutes. Haaland only played 22 minutes. Powell only played 22 minutes. And Tucker only played 11 minutes, which you can think it's fine now, but then the thing is when Terrence Mann then comes back as well. He's going to come and get his minutes. So I just don't know how the rotation are going to work. And because of pride, they're going to start all four of them. But very quickly, like 4 or 5 minutes into the game, you're going to have to pull one of them out so you can actually get the most out of everyone. So I'm just skeptical on how the rotation is going to work.
Like, that's where you have to have, obviously, everyone respects Ty Lue, and sometimes you got to be honest. And this is why you have to respect what the Golden States and how they run as an organization. Because at first, yes, the inkling was that CP3 was going to start, but then it just didn't make sense because you'd always seen that the Golden State's issue is when you took Steph out the game, they didn't have a great ball handler or a general on the floor. So they've told Chris Paul, cool, you know, certain periods, maybe in the fourth quarter, you might start with that, you know, starting unit. But from quarter one to quarter three, you're going to come off the bench. And what allows the Golden State Warriors to do is have for 48 minutes, you're going to have three generals that can ball handle on the court. You're going to have Steph, Draymond, and CP3 at any given time. And we've seen what CP3 can do with a second unit and younger players in terms of what he did at OKC. And right about now, it's flourishing for the Golden State Warriors. And what the Clippers will need to do is make that executive decision and say, okay, cool, either James Harden or Westbrook is going to have to basically control the second unit. And for me, if I was doing that, I'll have James Harden running the second unit because I think the way he plays will suit running an offense for the second unit. He wants to score. He wants to dribble. He can get other people into play. And I think it's better having Westbrook with Paul George and Kawhi as the energy guy within like the first three quarters. And then the fourth quarters, you can have them all as a running unit with Zubac. Yeah.
And that's what I think, I think Westbrook has done such a great job for the Clippers that I feel it would be kind of disrespectful to try and convince Westbrook to come on the bench.
Mm.
But then at the same time, as I said, I don't care how it ended.
Mm.
James Harden played at such an all-star level last year during the regular season, at least.
Yeah.
How do you then ask someone like that to... Because he, believe it or not, he has more pride than Westbrook. And we've seen it before. Like, obviously, people talk about Westbrook sulking, coming off the bench and blah, blah. But I've never seen a guy who seemed happier to, from a, as a superstar, to go from superstar to off the bench. He seemed as happy as he could look doing it. James Harden, we've seen the way he's acted in Brooklyn. We've seen the way he's acted in Philly when... I mean, he said in his pre-conference that... how Doc Rivers was holding him back and he felt like he could have given more. And even though Doc Rivers is saying some BS about James Harden is the reason or part of the reason he's doing TV right now, because I've seen a lot of Doc Rivers without James Harden to know that James Harden is the reason you're doing TV right now.
He's learned a lot of 3-1 leads, that's why.
Yeah, but then I also don't believe James Harden has been put on such a leash that he's now saying he's not a system player, he is the system. So we'll be interested to see how this works. I think they would need to win a bunch of games, because when they start losing games, then that's when all that conversation of off the bench, this and all that kind of stuff.
Of course.
And people are going to point and say, Rush should be the one to come off the bench because he's done it before. But not that I don't think he would take it too kindly. I think he would understand, especially Paul George and stuff taking to him. But I do feel like the morale of the Clippers would just like zoom even more and stuff, because the Clippers went out to get Russ as free agent and the return was... Harden is just here because he had the opportunity to be here and stuff. So,
and like you said, bro, like Russ has brought up so much like cachet within the Clippers. It would be bad for the Clippers just to say, do you know what? Cool, we've brought in someone else that we might think might be more useful, and then we're going to put you on the bench. I think James has to kind of just understand where he is at this present time in his career, and like people have too much ego and they think like coming off the bench is something bad. But if he knows, okay, cool, like literally, I don't think the Clippers will be able to pay him next season anyway. So he might as well be on the second unit and ball out where he can go to, I don't know, another organization, get a max contract and be that guy you want to be. So I think him being on the second unit is going to be good. Like we saw what the second unit did last season for the Clippers. They had a great second unit. If you have him as the general and you know the main bucket getter, and he's got someone else like Terrence Mann and all these guys to help him, I think it's going to be useful, because at the end of the day, every good team needs a good second unit. If you have a good second unit, the stars can get a 20-point lead, but once they're out of the game, that 20-point lead is now a 5-point.
And I think my biggest issue, and I don't know if I'm missing someone here. I think my last biggest issue is when you then look after the starting five, I think Haaland, after he left Denver, has become a respectable guard. I think Kawhi is a respectable guard.
Yeah.
And I think Terrence Mann is a respectable guard as well.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think outside the starting five, they have that many respectable forwards. Like, you've got PJ Tucker, but PJ Tucker, obviously, he's 52. he's like 52, and obviously he's defense. He won't give you much in offense and stuff. But then Plumlee, I mean,
like you said,
we've got to struggle against the tall teams.
And bro, like you just said there, I didn't even think about that. So when it comes to crunch times, one of them's gonna sit out anyway, because they're gonna play PJ Tucker because he's the defensive energy guy. So when you're playing a Phoenix Sun, people think that PJ's KD stopper. So they're gonna play PJ Tucker to stop him. So they're gonna go with the big three, whoever they're gonna choose, PJ Tucker and Zubac, just for size. So at some point, one of them's gonna have to be on the bench anyway, and it's not gonna start probably the fourth quarters, because PJ Tucker needs to start. And I don't know anyone that's gonna want to play, unless you're Golden State that don't have a big man, you're gonna play a small unit. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. We'll be interested to see what happens with the Clippers. Obviously, just staying in LA because they dropped another game yesterday, and I watched the fourth quarter of that game against the Heat. And the Lakers are 3-4 at the moment. Mm-hmm. Now, obviously, there's no reason to hit the panic button just yet. But actually, there is reason to hit the panic button, because 3-7 games, I feel like, and I'm someone who's always very optimistic about my Lakers and LeBron and stuff like that. Like, I'll be like, yeah, you know what, conference finals, we're going to make the finals. I know it's early and I hope I'm wrong, but I feel like I've seen enough from these seven games to know the Lakers are not winning no championship this year. And it's very, very sad to see. And I think two of the biggest reasons is, one, something that's happened in LeBron's whole career. It's for some reason, players join LeBron and they don't know how to shoot anymore. And I feel like it's
too much pressure.
I think there's that pressure. And two is, LeBron, when he's off the court, the standards have dropped dramatically. Yes. Now, obviously, I'm not going to blame AD, because I think AD has played well this year. I think defensively, in my eyes, he's still the best defender in the league. Or out of everyone I watch consistently, he's still the most elite defender I've ever seen and stuff. But I just don't think he has that ability to carry a team. And as I said, it's not his fault. I just feel like when LeBron is off the floor, whatever he does is just not impactful enough. Yeah. Even if he decides to give you it's like LeBron giving you 15 points when he's on seems more impactful than when LeBron AD gives you 30 points when he's there. I can't explain it. And as I said, there's not a slant AD. I think Darvin Ham had the excuse of Westbrook last year when people said, you know what, whatever you do, you can't win with Russ and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
I think this season, and Lakers fans have been getting on to him ever since Russ has been traded, and I think he's under trouble again. He's going to start again, because his rotations are just like, people just keep saying, like, what the fuck is this? Him and this free guard lineup and all that kind of stuff. Austin Reeves, even though he's played a bit better lately, he's like, since he got that new contract, it's like he went back to the player he was projected to be, that he was just overachieving last season. D'Lo, fans are saying they'll be surprised if he makes it to the end of the season and stuff like that. So obviously the Lakers are nowhere as bad as they were starting last season, because they started last season 2-10 and they won 3 games, which is already better in it. But I've seen what like Denver do. Like Jokic, how do you stop him? As we mentioned before the thing started, what Luka is doing, Golden State, as funny as everyone was seeing them coming into the season, Steph Curry is balling out of his mind, and he seems to still have the same impact. Anthony Edwards, I'm seeing him get a lot of good shots, and I think deservingly so. I picked him over LaMelo when they were first drafted, in terms of who I liked better. And people are saying that he's going to, I don't know if they can sustain this, but Rudy Gobert is back to being an elite, well, back to his elite defensive prowess as well. And people are saying Edwards could be the best player in the league. So when I'm looking at all these things going on, and I'm saying you're relying on, by the time the playoffs come around, he's going to be 39. And Phoenix will still need to get Bradley Beal and Devin Booker back. It's just like, I just don't see where our the championship is coming from.
And bro, that's why, see me, that's why when I tell you, and you man laugh, I'm a Lakers Warriors fan or LA's Warriors fan.
No, that's what's painful.
Do you know why? Because it's like, I've always supported the Lakers, and I just love Golden State as an organization, what they do. But I've just seen how the Lakers have been as an organization, and we all love LeBron. But if LeBron's your best player at 39, and then when he's out of the game, the guy that's meant to take the mantelpiece from him doesn't deliver. And the team that they've built, you look at the team they've built and you're thinking, what have you even built here? Like, there's nothing. You take away LeBron and AD from that team, it's a bunch of scrubs. Like,
we're going to go look at the team now.
It's a bunch of scrubs. Whereas you see Golden State, they've still got Steph, Clay, and Draymond, Then they was able to add Wiggins. They was able to draft Kuminga. They've got Moody. Now they've got CP3. They've got something that can continue, and they've just made the right trades and just built the right team. Like, everyone was laughing at Golden State when they traded Jordan Poole for CP3, but they needed an adult to run the second unit. Because, bro, I've seen Jordan Poole do some dumb things in the game. I'm like, bro, the guy's down 20. He's doing an alley-oop off the backboard for Carl Kuzma. Like, it makes sense. There was another one where he was dribbling. He could have went for a layup. He started walking back to the three-point line.
Oh, yeah, like, yeah.
And he got blocked by Porzingis. Like, yeah. Bro. Like, so...
I'm looking at the Lakers' saving grace is Rui Hachimura.
But bro, he was meant to be the guy, and the Wizards traded him. Like, make that make sense. So it's like,
yeah, man.
What are the Lakers doing here? Like, bro, I don't even know if the Lakers team is going to be a playing because OKC, the way they're moving with that young unit, and they're playing well without Jay Gilchrist Alexander, my guy, bro. I don't think they can even beat them in the playing game, bro. Yes, you're going to have LeBron, but even that one off game, yeah. But I'm just saying, like, I just think. Bro,
I think OKC still have a chance in a one-off game, but I think I'll give the Lakers this. Obviously, we saw what they did in the playoffs last year. I think the way they were able to take out Memphis, who were the third seed.
Memphis do a lot of talking, though. Remember, Memphis do a lot of yapping. They ain't really cheating. But my thing's like...
Yeah, and they beat Golden State as well. So I think when playoffs come, I think there's always a level that even at his old age, that LeBron can still impact. So I don't know if OKC... The fact we're having these conversations, it's just not good enough for where the Lakers should be. And the way I see the Lakers are a bit, not that I'm comparing them to Chelsea, but I've said it before, like, the reason why it's not real spooky for Chelsea right now is because of the Champions League we won in 21. It's giving us a bit of breathing room. And I think that is the same situation with, if the Lakers didn't win that ring they won in 2020, I think that you could be looking at them a bit worse than you look at the Clippers, because it's just been like a lot of years of wasting LeBron's, what's left of LeBron's prime and things like that. And as I said, and I think the biggest issue, I'm not even going to say it's AD, because I said AD has played really well. I just think the biggest issue might be the front office and what Darvin Ham is doing, because to not be able to sustain any type of lead when LeBron comes off, like,
but then, do you think that's Ham, though? Or, as we all said, AD doesn't have the dog in him. Because when AD won the chip, yeah, his trajectory was up here. Everyone's like, everyone was like, Giannis can't catch him. And right about now, Giannis has surpassed him in terms of being a leader of his team, being that guy of his team. And AD just doesn't have that hunger to be like, okay, cool, I want to take the mantle here.
I would have agreed. But the thing is that I've seen what AD is doing this season. And... even when he's, because as I said, especially on the defensive end, he's as elite as anyone in the NBA. And I think he's still putting up numbers offensively, and he's still scoring. It's just, I don't know what it is. The impact just isn't coming through.
That's what I'm trying to say, though. That's why in basketball they say, not every point is equal. Like, the same three-pointer that Steph Curry's going to hit, it's not the same three-pointer that CP3's going to hit, because we know the threes that Steph is going to hit, they're game changers. That's a run of, like, okay, cool, turnover three, turnover three, now they're up nine. Whereas CP3s might just be a regular three where it doesn't mean nothing at the beginning of the game. So, like, each points are not equal. So, like you said LeBron can have 15 points, but the way he gets them and when he gets them, they seem more valuable than KD, than AD's 30. Mm-hmm. Like, he might be getting these points here, but it's like, when you're already down 15, like, it don't mean anything. Like, when you're up or when you're at the same, you know, your level, okay, cool. Now you increase your play and allow to go up 15, where those points are going to be relevant. And I think KD hasn't kind of maturated in terms of where we all expect him to be at this period of time. We thought by the time LeBron's 39, it's AD's team and LeBron's there riding his coattails, in a sense. But LeBron is still Captain America at 39. That's crazy, bro.
No, we're going to see how the rest of the NBA continues to unfold. It's just, it's a sad reality for me to have accepted defeat this early. And I said, I hope I'm wrong, because, like, who doesn't want to see LeBron get number five?
Of course.
But it's just, the NBA is just different. And as I said, I think, and the biggest thing for me is, I just don't know how a team can stop Jokic at the moment. He's just literally unstoppable. Especially when I think playoff comes, because a man that has no weakness offensively can pass, he can dribble for his size, he can do like, his biggest weakness is slashing to the rim. But then, why do you need that? And I think Aaron Gordon, he seems to have taken up a bit of a level as well. So, well, it's interesting to see. Obviously, we're going to discuss more NBA as the season goes on and cover more teams, but that is all we do have time for today. As I said, thank you for tuning in and listening to the dynamic duo of Shaq and Kobe. Hopefully, we'll try and get more of the cast on again next week. We're going to be consistent again going forward because it looks like all the unforeseen circumstances have cleared. So, We are back, baby. So follow us on all social media platforms. I'm going to be back on TikTok as from, well, this is probably going to be on Wednesday. So I should be back on TikTok already from that point. If I'm not, then it's not possible because I will be back. No excuses. So I'll be back on TikTok. We're going to be back on YouTube. So follow us on TikTok, YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter. As it's been at the bottom all episode, outbound_UK. And thank you for listening. Until next time. Have a good week.